There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with, for a change, Greg and Colin.
Yeah. Big change.
Big change from last week and the week before.
Exactly.
A couple weeks before that. We want to talk about silver for a little bit.
Yeah. And why are we talking about silver?
Well, because it's expensive.
Right.
Right? It's gone up quite a bit in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to be talked about by investors. Silver and gold, for that case, really.
Yeah.
This is just another version, not to jump to the punchline, but of market timing.
Sure it is.
Right?
Yep.
But we wanted to start this one off because this one was is close to you and I, because back in 2008, I think it was, 2009,
yeah.
We had a client who loaded up on silver.
We did. So the background on this client is, we were coming out of the global financial crisis, and he was convinced that silver, well, gold and silver, but silver was cheaper to buy per ounce than gold. And he was convinced that what with the inevitable inflation that was going to happen because of all the money that the government was pumping into the system through, do you remember it was called TARP?
Yeah.
Temporary Asset Relief Program or some such thing.
Yep.
Anyway, but because the government was spending a lot of money, and back then, of course, it would seem quaint when we look at the money the government spent, you know, coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But anyway, coming out of the global financial crisis, the government was spending a lot of money, and this client was convinced that inflation was going to run rampant. Therefore, silver would be a great investment. But he didn't just look at, okay, well, I'm just going to buy some silver for the portfolio. He basically bought only silver.
He went all in.
He went all in. He filled up all of his personal portfolios. He actually looked after some estate accounts. He filled those all with silver, a single investment, and was convinced that this was the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, if I recall correctly, he bought silver in the low teens, maybe $14 an ounce or something like that. And his goal was, I will sell silver when it reaches $50 an ounce.
Yeah.
So, you know, so a couple of things. First of all, obviously, it's extremely risky putting all of your investments in a single commodity like silver, because I would say to him, well, what if you're wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if silver doesn't do what you expect it to do? And he said, well, if you can convince me that I could be wrong, then, you know, I'll change my approach.
And
of course, I couldn't convince him because he was so certain of the impending, you know, hyperinflation mm-hmm. that he was expecting that obviously I couldn't convince him.
And so where we're going with the story today for our listeners is that silver, of course, did hit $50 an ounce just a week or so ago or 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
So this person was actually right.
Yes.
But it took 17 years to get there.
Exactly. And, I think the other interesting thing, of course, was that silver briefly touched $48 an ounce back maybe in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
But it touched it for one day and then dropped back down to 45. And of course, the answer from the client was, well, I would have sold it, you know, at 48, but now I'm going to wait for it to get back there before I sell it.
Yeah.
So there may have been a very short window of opportunity to sell and make some good money. But silver, of course, dropped way back because hyperinflation did not kick in.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, that didn't kick in until 2022. So, you know, 13 years later. As a result, and I'm not sure we haven't had that client and since we left that firm that we were at the time. So I'm not exactly sure what happened with those particular investments, but the moral of the story is, let's say you were able to hold on to that silver.
Mm-hmm.
You bought it at $14 and it's now trading at over $50 an ounce. So let's say you had been able to, while everybody else was making, lots of money with the fantastic returns that we've seen in the stock market since that time, let's say you were able to stick to that strategy and hold on and sell today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the annualized return on that would have been somewhere between 8% and 9%, depending on what the actual price you paid for it. In the same time, you would have got over an 11% return out of the U.S. stock market in the same period of time in a much more diversified and low-risk way, much lower volatility, watching things go up almost every year. And so, you know, the question, I guess, is how likely would you have been able to withstand all of that noise going on around you to hold on to that silver investment?
Well, and I would argue right now, if that person was still invested in silver, they probably wouldn't sell it at $50 because they'd say, well, it hit 50, it's going to 60.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're talking about silver today, but we could also talk about gold in the same way.
Sure.
Right? The there's a lot of hype around precious metals at different times of different cycles.
Yeah.
And you'll hear people say, well, if you're not investing in gold right now, like, you're crazy. Right?
Yeah.
But we know that gold is actually a super volatile commodity.
Absolutely.
And so it's not a good hedge against anything. And if you're looking for absolute return, we can show all the data that shows just buy the stock market.
Yeah.
In every period, every long-term period, you would have done much better than individual precious metals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so no, it's an interesting, the whole silver story is a bit of an interesting case study because, you know, there were periods like 2009 to 2011 where it had a pretty nice run-up, although, as I say, it spent very little time at the peak.
Yeah, like a minute.
Yeah. After that, you know, from 2012 to 2019, basically, silver collapsed more than 60%, you know, and spent most of the next 10 years doing nothing.
Let's say you were an investor in 2008. We just entered the global financial crisis. You watched the stock market go down 50%.
Yep.
Because that's what happened,
right?
So you're like, you know what? I give up on the stock market. I'm going all in on silver.
Yep.
At $48 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And then you watch, then you held on to silver and you watched it go down 60% in 2011.
Yeah.
That's not a good ride.
That's right. And the likelihood is that you would have given up, you know, thrown in the towel and sold at a low, you know, lost another 50% of your money and then maybe gone back into the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a nasty kind of volatile roller coaster that you get on, particularly when you get on to some of these individual assets, you know, silver is a commodity. It has some similarities to gold, but not all, you know, it doesn't have necessarily all the same uses that gold does, but different uses. But it's just, it just shows us how, you know, when you chase that, and listen, if somebody had chosen to put 5% of their investments into silver or gold or both, we probably would have said, yeah, fine. You know, it's like, what the heck? It's a diversifying, you know, addition to the portfolio. And so what, you know, so what?
No different than if they said, let's put 5% into cryptocurrency today.
Exactly.
Say, well, as long as it's less than 5% and 95% of your portfolio is well diversified.
Yeah.
If that's what you really want to do.
For sure. No, everyone's entitled, and as we've talked many times, you know, sometimes if you have a particular pet sector of the market, or you know, or a strong belief in something, nothing wrong with acting on it to a reasonable extent.
But that silver story isn't about the metal itself, right? It's just a story about human behavior.
Yeah,
and you know, and a story about market timing.
That's right.
And we know how this plays out because we've done many episodes on human behavior and market timing. And actually, we've come to the conclusion that most questions we get are some form of a market timing question.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Should I buy that stock right now? Should I buy gold?
Yeah.
Should we get out of the stock market?
Yeah. Are things too expensive? Is Trump going to put more tariffs on?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, market timing rarely works. Usually the best days follow the worst, which is interesting to me because we talked about this a few weeks ago. Let's say the Dow Jones goes down 1,000 points and people go, oh, geez, what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
Well, typically within a couple of days, it's actually up more than the 1,000 points that it fell.
That's right.
So, yeah, you know, as long as you didn't make some crazy decision in those couple of days, you're probably fine. And, you know, that I guess that's the staying invested just beats guessing. What about the FX portion of silver and gold?
Well, I mean, there's certainly an issue with regards to, you know, the Canadian-U.S. exchange rate. Mm-hmm. Because silver trades in U.S. dollars. And so if our dollar weakens after you've made your silver purchase, then, of course, you can get higher returns
mm-hmm.
because of the conversion into a lower cost Canadian. But you know, currency exposure can be a risk and a reward.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about in the past, trading currency or using currency as a way to enhance returns can often work against you mm-hmm. because there are so many factors that go into global, you know, foreign exchange rates
yeah.
that you just can't stay ahead of it. And particularly, I mean, the volatility of currency is more than the volatility of the bond market.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, you're probably better off, you know, buying bonds or something and trying to minimize the effect of currency on your returns.
Well, you and I sat in on a presentation because a question we also get is, should I be hedging this or, you know, hedging my currency or not,
yep.
right? And remember Gerard O'Reilly, who's just happens to be the co-chief executive officer of Dimensional Fund Advisors,
yeah,
and also happens to be a rocket scientist,
mm-hmm.
pretty smart dude,
yep.
right? Gave a presentation that we sat in on to hedge or not to hedge.
Yeah.
And it was an hour-long discussion with the longest formula I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And the summary was, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because you're trying to predict the future.
Yeah.
You know, so...
So again, another market timing question.
Exactly.
Hedge or not to hedge, right?
Yeah, that's right. When you sort of say, well, what's the takeaway here from what's the silver story takeaway? Well, again, it's as you've said, it's always a market timing thing. But whether it's silver, stocks, real estate, prices will always swing. Headlines will distract and emotions are going to pull you off course. If you have a structured investment-based approach, diversified, rebalanced, tax efficient as much as possible, that basically turns that volatility into maybe opportunities for growth.
Right. But that's the silver market. But let's talk about the stock market.
Sure.
Because the other question we get right now is, you know, everything seems so expensive right now. Like, is there going to be a correction? What should we be doing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, people are right. Like, the stock markets have gone up quite a bit in the last 4 years.
Sure they
right?
have.
Yeah. I think the U.S. market's up like 80% over mm. that four-year period.
Yeah.
And so it is a fair question to say, like, are things just a little expensive right now?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. What does expensive actually mean to people is the right. question.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So when we, you know, when we talk about the market looks expensive, really we're talking about valuations, basically how much investors are willing to pay for a dollar of earnings. So the standard measure of that would be the price to earnings ratio. So
yeah.
How many dollars of price are you willing to pay for a dollar of earnings, basically? So there's the PE ratio, there's what's called the CAPE ratio, which is cyclically adjusted price to earnings, because what that does is it looks at as the earnings profile over 10 years, as opposed to, you know, just a single year, because in a single year, you know, if something dramatic has happened, it can throw price to earnings ratios way off
mm-hmm.
and in a way that maybe would not be sort of instructive for trying to decide what to do. So it just adjusts, you know, earnings over a longer period of time to get a true PE ratio.
Yeah.
Or and some people also use price to book,
mm-hmm.
Meaning how many dollars are you willing to spend for a dollar of book value of the underlying company. And these are just a variety of fundamental measures of valuation. When people look at current valuations, they'll look historically and say, okay, well, does this seem high mm-hmm. relative to history, low, or is it fair based on the average? Yeah.
Well, I think the price earnings ratio right now is on the high side.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
Because you're right. It's just that stock price divided by corporate earnings is yep. the price earnings ratio. However, what I've been talking to people about is that as we've had an interest rate cut in September,
yep.
we're expecting a few more interest rate cuts before the end of the year. Well, that just means that company borrowing costs are going to go down, which means that their earnings are going to go up. So naturally, that price earnings multiple is going to adjust down.
That's right. As earnings come in strongly, then the higher PE ratio is justified because you expect future earnings to grow quickly as well.
Yeah. So valuations tell us something about expected returns over the next decade or so.
Yeah.
But almost nothing about what will happen in the next 6 to 10 months.
Well, that right? and that's the thing, you know. So, market historians or people that look at, you know, sort of market data we'll go back and say, okay, well, in the past, when valuations are here, expected returns over the next 7 to 10 years might be either higher or lower. So if the PE ratios are higher than average, then they might be tempted to say, okay, well, over the next 7 to 10 years, expected returns would be lower than average. But it doesn't tell you anything about what returns are going to be over the next 7 to 10 months.
Yeah.
You know, and that
I said that, 6 to 10 months, Greg.
Oh, okay, sorry. 6 to 10 months. Some short period of time. Let's say that.
Let's talk about an example of that. So in 1996, then Fed Chair Alan Greenspan warned of something called irrational exuberance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And I believe at that time price earnings multiples were pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So what happened to the market after these this warning is it tripled in value before the next major correction. So
yeah.
So yeah, I guess he was right. There was a correction coming.
Yeah.
But if you'd gotten out, you had walked away from 300% returns.
Well, that's right. And that, of course, you know, that was the, and the market was high and getting higher all the time, you know, because that was the period leading up to the, you know, the tech bubble, you know, which ultimately burst. But, you know, again, that was March of 2000, you know, and this is Greenspan in 1996.
Yeah.
And so identifying the fact that the PE ratio or the CAPE ratio is higher than average does not tell you what's going to happen to the market over, particularly over that short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you waited, you know, if you, as you say, if you got out, you know, then you just missed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So again, it comes back to behaviors, behavioral side of investors, of people.
Yeah.
Because when markets are rising, we naturally feel two conflicting emotions. We feel optimism that things are going well, but there's also that little bit of fear that's there that says, well, when's this going to end?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and humans are wired for things like pattern recognition, right? So we try to look for patterns from history and try to associate, you know, so for example, we might associate record highs with, oh, due for a fall.
Yeah.
And as we've said, you might, you know, you might experience that, but you have no idea when.
Well, yeah. I had a meeting yesterday and the person said to me, what's the chance of an upcoming correction?
Yeah.
And I said, well, 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Just don't know if that's like 6 to 10 months out or
right.
2 to 3 years out.
You know, the fact of the matter is that when you hit record highs, of which the stock market hits many record highs, they're more a sign of progress, not necessarily of danger.
Yeah.
Right. And so if earnings are growing, you know, and markets are going up and valuations are going up because investors believe that earnings will continue to grow strongly, then that's progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what people should be doing then when they do feel this, right? When, okay, markets are expensive. You know, there's a lot of headlines in the world right now about stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, what should people do? I guess the first thing you should do is just revisit your plan.
Right on.
Right? Just ignore those headlines because your portfolio should be driven by your plan.
Yeah.
Right? What are your goals, your time horizon, your risk capacity? Not by what's happening to silver in the moment or gold or whatever, right?
Right.
Right? So a big one we talk about is asset allocation.
For sure.
I believe it to be the most important decision that an investor makes.
Yeah.
Followed very closely by diversification.
Exactly.
Right?
Which are, they are similar.
Similar.
Yep. Yep.
Another one that we look at is asset location.
Sure.
Which is, okay, different asset classes are taxed differently. And in Canada, we've got ways to accommodate for that, right?
Yeah.
We've got tax-free savings accounts, RSPs, non-registered accounts, et cetera. And, you know, it's one thing to determine, well, how much risk should be in your overall portfolio, but then from a tax perspective, what should be held in each account?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And the other thing you don't want to overlook is the importance of rebalancing.
Yep.
Because the, you know, rebalancing is just a way of selling high and buying low, you know? So it's like after a strong stock market returns like we've had, there's a very good chance that investors' portfolios have moved off of their, you know, strategic allocation.
Yeah.
So if you're 50% stocks, 50% bonds after the stock market returns we've had lately, there's a very good chance you might be 55% stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so just rebalancing without any drama, without any predicting you're going to sell that 5% that you're overweight now in stocks, mm-hmm. take the gains and reallocate to bonds, which maybe have not performed as well.
Yeah. And you know what kind of drives me crazy in Canada is you know, everybody talks about the TSX.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll say, oh, the TSX is at a record high or the TSX is doing this or whatever. TSX is such a small part of the overall market.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it's really driven by a couple of sectors.
Yep.
Primarily resources and banking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we need investors to look globally. Look outside of Canada,
yeah.
Right?
And not just globally, because certainly there are other, as you say, there's lots of other areas of the world where we can make good investments,
mm-hmm.
Europe and Asia. But looking at factor portfolio, you know, factors in portfolios, so value-oriented investments or small cap or profitability, using that as a guide, because you know, those types of investments have been proven to help long-term returns.
Yeah.
They won't always be in favor, but they will be in favor at some point when the large cap stocks, like the mega caps that we talk about all the time, the Magnificent Seven or whatever, when those kinds of stocks take a breather, then there's lots of opportunity for small companies and for cheaper stocks,
yeah.
Lower valuation stocks to outperform.
I think the issue right now is value's been out of favor for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I think that if you had an investor who was value oriented,
mm-hmm.
They might feel a little bit like that silver investor in 2011.
Exactly.
Saying, well, wait a minute, like growth has just taken off. I've been holding on to this value tilt.
Yep.
When's it coming?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess our answer would be, it's coming.
Yeah, eventually. Eventually. And the whole, I mean, that's the whole goal of diversification, of course, is like if you don't have exposure to those value or small companies, then when things do cycle and large companies and growth companies take a breather, then, you know, where are you going to invest?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, well, diverse broadly, invest broadly, and you don't need to worry about where the growth is coming from in any particular year.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, some years it might be from fixed income.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, focus on what you can control is another big one. So how much are you spending? How much are you saving? Are you tax aware? And are you keeping your costs reasonable? I mean, when markets feel uncertain, we need to focus on the fundamentals. Like you said, rebalance, harvest tax losses. And the big one is stay invested.
And as we've mentioned before, you know, over a period of 30 years, even if you miss the best 10 days of the market in that entire, you know, a 30-year period, you can cut your return in some cases by nearly half. And that's just because of the power of compounding or the lack of that.
Yeah. So that's 10 days mm-hmm. over 30 years.
Yep.
There's roughly 220 trading days a year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's a lot of years. 6,000, 7,000 days.
Right. Like 10 days out of 7,000-ish days.
Yep.
So yeah, stay invested, right? So. So what? How can we wrap this part up, Greg?
Well, I think the you know, there was a great article a while ago about the worst market timer in history,
mm-hmm.
and this is the theoretical investor who bought at the highs of the market every single year. So always buying not when things are low, but when prices are high. And if you look at the returns of that worst market timer ever, the returns have actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and very reasonable, you know, particularly if you set your goal, as we talked about the other day, you know, set your goal as what do you need to achieve to meet your financial plan, you know, main areas. Yeah, you would have done just fine, even picking the highest point every year to invest.
Yeah.
So they say the market doesn't reward predictors, it rewards participants.
Mm-hmm.
And that just means, you know, being in the market with the right investment strategy.
Yeah, like we're not immune to market timing. Like right now, as we pointed out, the U.S. stock market is up 80% over the last 4 years.
Yep.
But there's also this crazy data that says that when you're in the last 12 months of a bull market, you typically double whatever was returned in the previous part of the bull market.
Okay, yep.
So, you know, I would just caution people, like, don't give up, right?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Because even though, like, people say it's expensive, the truth is markets often look expensive right before they go higher.
Yeah.
And cheap right before they fall.
Yeah.
So that's why we don't build portfolios on forecasts. We build them on evidence.
Yeah, exactly. And just one more point I wanted to talk about being a relatively recent retiree.
Yeah.
So a lot of retired people, you know, get particularly uneasy when valuations are high.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that can be, you know, and the uneasiness is a behavioral thing we've talked about. Of course, it's, you know, of course you might feel uneasy because of all the reasons we talked about earlier. But the way to deal with that is just to say, okay, well, look, I'm going to have a cash supply, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years of income tucked away in cash to meet my spending requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, if the markets, if we do go down through a downturn, we don't need to sell out, you know, stocks at low prices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you can, you know, if you can weather the storm for a year or two, markets generally have recovered nicely. And if you haven't had to sell assets in order to meet your spending requirements, then you haven't locked in any losses.
Yeah. Or if you don't need that spending requirement because you just don't.
Yeah.
And markets go down. Well, I call that Baydays, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
The market's 20% off. That's like going to the former Hudson Bay and you just happen to stumble across a Bayday sale.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're rebalancing your portfolio, buying equities that are cheaper. And you'll get just more expected return going forward.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, anything else?
Nope, just, you know, just focus on evidence, focus on, you know, staying invested through discomfort, and believe that what's happened in the past will continue to happen in the future. And that's that, you know, prices may change, but all those principles of, you know, solid investing will continue to apply.
I can't believe you you advised that person to go 100% into silver, Greg. Of course, I'm joking.
Of course you are. In fact, we advised so much against it. We had letters in the file, you know, with compliance and other, you know, areas of the company to ensure that, you know, we covered off the fact that this, you know, these were self-directed choices and not recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've actually left relationships over the years because of decisions like that, right?
For sure.
Where, you know, there's a sleep at night mentality,
yeah,
where we want our investors to be able to sleep at night,
mm-hmm.
but we also need to be able to sleep at night.
That's right.
And when somebody is gone all in on a call like that,
yep,
I can't sleep. I
can
worry.
Tell you it affected my sleep during that period as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, an exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by, and are not necessarily those of, Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice, and should not be relied as such.